Hi everyone, and welcome back to Conscious Fitness Divine Body. Tonight I'm so excited because we didn't have enough of him, so we had to have him back again. And for the third time, we're going to have the pleasure and the honor to receive with us. And I'm going to be hosting tonight a great show about, again, tarot and the thought tarot card with Lon Milo Ducate. And hi, Lon, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, so Lon was telling me right before the beginning of the show that he was looking at a beautiful sunset going down through a window of his house and with incense burning. So I guess we all are ready to hear more about this thought tarot card with all this preparation.
I'm in a very mystical environment here.
Oh, very good. We love that. And how better it is than you know, talking mystics and mystical and with a thought tarot card, because just to give a little feedback to our listeners, we had Lon couple of times before in July, and Lon is this very knowledgeable and very fun person to interview to talk about the thought tarot cards. And so the beginnings, we kind of went from the wider, and we're getting closer to the cards, but we needed to find out a little bit more about what was a tarot card, how was it created, who was Aleister Crowley's its author and designer with his partner, and then we went to understanding the Kabbalistic explanation behind the Aleister Crowley's game, and then now we kind of narrow it down to kind of find out really when we play the game, like really practical way, what are the, we're going to talk about the major arcanas, unless Lon sees better understanding in another way, but somehow those are very, to me, mysterious and very full of secrets to be revealed, to be able to use it as a tool to growth, to personal growth and spiritual growth. So what do you think, Lon? We're going with those great arcanas tonight?
Yes, that's fine with me.
Great.
I've forgotten what we said in the earlier program, so please forgive me if I repeat myself.
And you know,
you just tell me. Oh, you said that last time.
Yeah, okay, I will do that. I will do that because I keep such a great memory of our session that everything is definitely imprinted, that I just have to open the drawer up in my mind, and everything is going to come out of it because it really makes so much sense that he put it in such a perspective that makes gave me a great meaning. So I will definitely tell you. And I think that it's always good to get back to, you know, what you've talked about earlier, because it's so linked to all the Kabbalistic meanings that you explained to us. So I think it's somehow, and don't forget, listeners, that you always have the possibility to get back to the archives. And if there's something that is really getting your curiosity in this show and that is linked to a previous show with Lon, then you get back to the website on BBS Radio, you get on the archive, and you can retrieve the two first shows that we have, and then you get like 3 complete hours of pure bliss with Lon.
Love it.
All right, so let's get started. Like, do you think that we should go, or should we go, in the numbered order, 0 to all the way to the end, like 21, or is it something that is more subtle, that I don't see, don't know, don't understand yet, where there's another order that makes actually more sense?
We could do it in absolutely any order, and it would still make as much sense or not make sense. In the same way that the tarot is it's a living organism, really,
mm-hmm.
and it's almost like asking if we want to talk about an elephant, should we start talking about the trunk first, or
okay.
or its tusks, or its tail? It's a living. The tarot is a living organism of images and archetypal symbols that. If we really wanted to be honest with ourselves about symbols and symbolism, we can't define them in the same way as we define other things in our life. A symbol, including a tarot card, is indefinable. The second we define a symbol, it ceases to be a symbol, and it starts to be an emblem.
I see. Very cool.
And so the cards, we sort of need to look at a deck of tarot cards, just in the table in front of us, a deck of tarot cards, as a living organism. And that when we, depending on the circumstances, depending on our state of mind, depending on our level of initiation, our personal level of spiritual development, these wonderful symbols trigger different things in people.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to start when I start talking about the Thoth Tarot. I like to start at the beginning and start with the Fool, because the major arcana in the Thoth Tarot is it has a lot of similarities with standard tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that there's a couple little revolutionary things that Crowley did, but For the most part, we're looking at a standard tarot deck, and so many of the comments that we might make about the Thoth Tarot, we're making the same comments about the tarot in general.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first opened my box of Thoth Tarot cards, and this was way back before you were born, probably. But, I never even heard of Aleister Crowley. The Thoth Tarot was my introduction to Aleister Crowley and Thelema and magic.
Mm-hmm.
And when I opened the deck up, I saw the Fool first, and he scared me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It wasn't like the Fool card that you usually see, a kind of a handsome young man or young woman, we're not sure, looking up at the sky, with a rose in his hand, and he's getting ready to step off of a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was expecting to see an image like that, but instead I see this character that's leaping out of the card at me in kind of almost a three-dimensional way, and he looks crazy.
He does.
He absolutely looks crazy, and in a way it disturbed me. And but as I was looking at it, I recognized all of the familiar elements. He's got a staff over his shoulder, and that staff has a bag on it, and he doesn't have a dog nipping at him, but he's got a tiger biting at his leg, and I great art is supposed to disturb you.
That's true.
And if it doesn't disturb you, it's not great enough.
Uh-huh.
And so I got disturbed, and I looked at a few of the other trumps, and I went through them. And they all had this haunting beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked at the box, it said Aleister Crowley on it. Mm-hmm. And I never, the name rang a bell, but I wasn't familiar with Crowley. And I looked him up in Little Occult Dictionary, and it said a famous Scottish Satanist. And I go, oh, oh, that's why these cards disturb me, because this guy's the devil, you know. And, but obviously I overcame that superstition and made this study my life, really. Mm-hmm. But do we want to discuss the elements of the cards as we go along?
You know, we can if you think that it is really important for because it is very interesting when you were mentioning that you open it and you realize that you looked at you observed the cards, and there are so many things in the cards to look at. And I remember one comment that you made the first or second time is that really every one of us who is looking at those cards are going to feel and see different things. But by looking at it, you are transported. You are carrying yourself through every details, and it triggers something within you that is actually probably what the magic effect of the cards is.
Absolutely, it does trigger something in you.
Yes.
Even if you don't sense that it does.
It does,
it
definitely.
Does.
So maybe actually, if you think that it's important to kind of take some characteristic of the design or the color of the, you know, the shape, whatever you think is important and needs to be taken out, definitely please do so.
Well, first of all, the coloring of the cards. The cards were painted by Frieda Harris, the wife of Lord Harris, a member of Parliament in England, but she painted them to Crowley's strict directions, and she sometimes had to repaint the cards eight times, as many as eight times, to get it right. There are scales of color. You know, we were talking about that wonderful schematic diagram, the Tree of Life, last time a little bit.
Yes.
And that Tree of Life is sort of a road map of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And down at the very bottom is us, naturally, you know. And at the very top of the Tree of Life is the consciousness of pure deity.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the consciousness descends the Tree of Life, it's almost like light that's broken up by a prism into slower and slower vibratory rates of color. And so the Kabbalists, or, you know, early on, said, we can describe just in color this descent of consciousness into matter, and they based everything on the fourfold division of the soul and the fourfold division of the universe along the lines of Yod Hey Vav Hey, the fourfold name of God. So everything, they split everything up into four, descending essences. And the same thing goes with light. So certain of these cards, because, you know, each of the 22 trumps and each of the 56 small cards all have their place on a Tree of Life. And that place on the Tree of Life has specific colors. It has specific colors, and it doesn't have other colors in it. You know, it's remarkable. So Harris had to paint these cards using the correct colors. And not only the correct colors of the path along the Tree of Life, but also, you know, certain of these cards have planetary and zodiacal and elemental meanings, and they too have colors. And so Frieda Harris, when she painted these cards, was limited to a palette of colors for each one of these cards. Now, you might think that that's kind of silly, you know, because you know, an artist should have free reign over her art. But it wasn't. This is something that Crowley was designing at the very end of his life, and he wanted it to be right.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you weren't impressed by the Kabbalistic meanings of the cards, or the maybe you don't even care about what Hebrew letter it stands for and what planet or zodiac mm-hmm. sign that might be, or what part of your soul. Just by looking at the cards and their color,
mm-hmm.
the meanings of the cards get inside your brain through the cones and rods of your eye.
Exactly.
Just working with the, just playing with the cards,
mm-hmm.
Having them in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you know it or not, you're getting the impact of those cards. So, that being said, let's look at this fool card that impressed me so much.
Yes.
The trumps, the 22 trumps, are numbered,
mm-hmm.
but the fool's number is zero.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, we can say that that all of the tarot cards live inside the fool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when the fool drops off that cliff, you know, the adventure, his adventure when he falls off that cliff is the tarot itself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really two zeros in the trumps. The first trump, which is the fool,
mm-hmm.
and the last trump, which is the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the Book of Thoth, or in the Thoth Tarot, the universe card is this wonderful dancing goddess. She's dancing in space, and she's surrounded by, in classic things, the belt of the zodiac. And what the fool is that zero, that nothingness that precedes manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
So when people ask a Kabbalist, well, where did God come from?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is God came from nothing. The ultimate identity of God is this wonderful, sublime, very special kind of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
This zero. So the zero, the fool is popping out of mm-hmm. zero, saying, let's start a universe, you know.
Yes.
Let's become self-aware. And the universe card at the very end is a universe that has been manifested. It has fulfilled its potentiality, and it's getting ready to withdraw once again into that divine nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the entire pageantry of creation is all of the cards in between.
All right. That makes it pretty clear where we are and where we're going. That's good.
Well, you know, it's not something that's... it's a concept that isn't, you know, restricted to, you know, tarot or Kabbalah or the religion or spirituality mm-hmm. of the West. The Hindus have this idea of pralaya, this zero where the universe is at rest periodically,
mm-hmm.
and then it bursts forth into manifestation and runs its course, and then it takes a rest.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a, you know, it's a very universal concept.
Mm-hmm.
But the fool card in Crowley's deck here in the Book of Thoth, the fool has a bag over his shoulder, and it's kind of hard to see because it's camouflaged by grapes and other things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a transparent bag, and inside the bag, you see it's full of coins.
Mm-hmm.
And each of the coins has a symbol of a planet or a zodiac sign,
mm-hmm.
or an element. So in other words, he's carrying all the other tarot cards in his bag.
I see.
And there's other things that are associated with the element air. You know, air, for all intent and purposes, looks like nothing. So it's perfect for the fool. But nothing is a very wonderful thing when people say, you know, what is more powerful than God?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Nothing.
What is greater than God? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
What is more loving than God? Nothing.
Yes.
Okay. But that nothing is a real thing.
Yes.
Okay. But there are other things that sort of show that this is air. And an image that you might not have ever noticed, there's a diving dove, a white dove that's descending, and it's just sort of to the left of the fool's armpit there.
Yes.
But there is another bird. There is a vulture. A vulture that is diving, also diving, and you can see the vulture's wings, and if you look kind of close there, you can see its beak and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that vulture is from Egyptian mythology, and it's the goddess Maat.
Mm.
And this may seem a little silly here, but the vulture was so sacred to the Egyptians because I guess they're very private birds when it comes to making love.
Mm.
And let's say mating, you know. You think they make love, I don't know. But I guess no one had ever seen, you know, vultures mate. But obviously they have little vultures and lay eggs and things like that. So
it must happen.
But vultures also have this habit that when the wind blows, when, you know, the hot desert wind blows, and they're stuck on the ground, they turn their backs toward the wind, and you know, so their head doesn't get blown on, but their backsides get blown on, and it's obvious that the wind is ruffling their feathers, you know, where their sex organs are. And so it became an Egyptian myth that vultures became pregnant magically through the intervention of the wind.
Oh.
Now, the word spirit means breath, means wind. And the idea that... and you always even in Christian iconography, you've got you know, the descending dove. Gabriel appears to Mary as a dove. You know, the breath of life.
Yes.
Okay, Adam was just a you know, a clay statue until the breath came. So there's something very, very fundamentally important in these matters when it comes to air. So something else is going to happen right in the Thoth Tarot when it comes to the Chariot card, which is just a few cards away.
Yeah.
And the charioteer in the Thoth deck carries the Holy Grail in his hands, and on the Tree of Life, where the Chariot card goes on the Tree of Life actually crosses the abyss from number 5 to number 3, and it's a very, very important and a profound concept. The Holy Grail. He delivers the Holy Grail to the sacred goddess in number 3, or Bina.
Mm-hmm.
But when Crowley describes this, he has a little poem that goes for each of these tarot cards. Mm-hmm. And the one for the Chariot says, "The issue of the vulture, two in one conveyed. This is the power of the, this is the Chariot of Power."
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, "Trink, the last oracle." Now, I'm not going to get into this too deeply here because we've only got an hour. But one of the most important aspects of the Thoth Tarot is the fact that Crowley, toward the end of his life here, is trying to explain everything he knows about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big job, you know. But part of the thing that really impressed Crowley, something that he more or less dedicated or focused the last half of his life on, was the miracle and the magic of human sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And the true heavy magic that makes us creative beings. And he took the miracle of birth and really showed the miracle of it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
This is heavy magic. Okay, to him, just the natural processes that your mom and dad and my mom and dad went through to get me, they didn't think of it as magic per se,
mm-hmm.
but it really is, because they created a vessel for an incarnating human soul.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever that true definition is, please don't ask me to define it. I don't know. but that is big magic.
Mm-hmm.
And so Crowley, among all of this other things, of trying to, tell everything he knows about everything, he's also telling a story in these trumps of a wonderful, wonderful secret of sexual alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
And for those, who have kind of eyes to see it, it's in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to rationalize it or analyze it. Just become familiar with the cards.
Yes.
So the alchemical cards start with the first numbered card, the Magus,
mm-hmm.
and he's Mercury himself.
Mm-hmm.
And did we talk about synthetic projective geometry last time?
We didn't mention it. Yeah, we did. And you explained what it was because we were talking about Freda. And you are more than welcome to mention it again.
Oh well, it's just this very bizarre,
mm-hmm.
and stunning sort of way that Freda Harris incorporated this theoretical geometry,
mm-hmm.
In order to make the cards look like either you're being drawn into the card or they're
mm-hmm.
popping out. It's an experimental thing that just looking at some of the cards is obliging you to do something else with your brain, to see it. But the first alchemical card is the Magus card, and he's obviously Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in alchemy, Mercury, salt, and sulfur, when they're properly combined and balanced,
mm-hmm.
create this thing called vitriol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an acid,
mm-hmm.
or they talk about it like it's an acid that can dissolve anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the Mercury, the Magus there, and then the very next card is the High Priestess, and she's not an alchemical card per se. Let's skip over her just for a second. mm-hmm. and go to the next card, the third numbered card, and it's the Empress.
Yes.
And the Empress, if you'll look at her, the way she's holding her arms, she's mm-hmm. actually... she's actually making her body the symbol of salt.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
So she's the second alchemical. She's the okay. white tincture. She's salt.
Okay.
And the very next card is the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
And you notice if you put those two cards side by side, the Empress is looking to the right, and the Emperor is looking to,
yeah.
to the left. They're gazing at each other.
Yeah, and look at the difference in the colors.
Yes. So he is a sulfur.
Uh-huh.
So between the mercury, salt, and sulfur, those three characters can make the vitriol.
Oh, right.
And something really wonderful happens at sort of the climax of this alchemical operation. The Empress is her token is sort of a white eagle,
mm-hmm.
and the Emperor is like a red lion,
mm-hmm.
and they actually show up at a marriage ceremony that takes place in the sixth numbered tarot card called the Lovers.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. Love it. Oh, yes.
So you see the white eagle standing there like a bridesmaid. You know?
Exactly.
And the red lion is standing there sort of like the best man.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And... This is a scene from a famous alchemical text called the Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreutz.
Mm.
And the minister there that's putting his hands over their heads in a blessing, Crowley identifies this as the Hermit.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
The Hermit in the trump card, the Hermit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the wedding ceremony, and there's going to be a honeymoon, and there's going to be a baby eventually, as we go through the tarot cards, at least looking at them at, you know, the aspect of this sexual alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
But at a magic moment, that red lion is going to turn white, and that white eagle is going to turn red.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the alchemist knows that, you know, the magic has occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, then turning to the seventh numbered trump is the Chariot,
mm-hmm.
as almost as if to say, you know, what's happening at that wedding is the ultimate secret of the Holy Grail.
Okay.
And believe it or not, that vulture has something to do. That has something to do with it. Okay, but it's okay. Now the eighth numbered trump is called adjustment. Now in most tarot decks, it's called justice.
Yes.
And it's the classic goddess of justice. You know, sometimes she's got a blindfold on, and she has swords and balances.
Mm-hmm.
And in a very strange way, the goddess that's justice is the fool's girlfriend.
Oh.
They go together.
Okay.
Or at least they go together in a manifested universe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Hebrew letter that... is attributed to the justice card, or the adjustment card here,
mm-hmm.
Is Lamed.
Mm-hmm.
And Lamed stands right in the middle of the Hebrew alphabet.
Mm.
Just like the point of a scale.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. in her own way, because she is, you know, equidistant from the beginning and the end,
mm-hmm,
of the number trumps anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fool is kind of out of the sequence, so you've got,
mm-hmm,
21 cards that are left,
mm-hmm,
and if you have them lined up according to their Hebrew alphabet letters. We've got Justice in the middle. She's got 10 cards in front of her and 10 cards in back of her.
Yes.
So there's it's this position of balance. It's this,
mm-hmm,
still point, and her position there makes her just almost as special as the fool himself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because no other card is so balanced.
Yes.
As zero. So she's the fool's girlfriend, and the fool's Hebrew letter is Aleph, or A, and Justice is Lamed, and you put them together, it's A-L, and A-L is the most primitive and fundamental name of God, L.
Oh.
And if you spell it backwards, L-A, it means not.
Oh.
Like a big zero, not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool. That's why angel names, you know, so many angel names end with A-L to identify with God.
Oh, my name starts with A-L.
Right. And, you know, there are other names of God, like Elohim starts with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
And so it's very heavy.
Yes.
So the next numbered card is the Hermit.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is really, really kind of wild. And this is where the egg that was created back there in the lover's card at that wedding,
mm-hmm,
there was a special egg. They call it the Orphic egg.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there at the wedding. The Hermit card is where that egg gets fertilized.
Oh.
And so you see all of these sheaves of waving wheat. And,
yeah.
They look so much like wriggling sperm.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hermit himself, it appears that this is all taking place under the earth, in the warm privacy,
mm-hmm,
of the earth. But he's holding the lamp of the sun,
mm-hmm,
and he's Thoth himself. It's a very stylized card if you're looking at it, but the hermit is Thoth himself with that ibis head.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking down at that Orphic egg. If I was,
yes,
that Orphic egg, I'd be nervous.
It's like, what's going to happen to me?
Yes. But wonderful things are going to happen to it. But that's,
yes,
that is the moment where this mystical Orphic egg becomes fertilized.
Mm-hmm.
And like all fertilized eggs, it's going to need care,
mm-hmm,
and it's going to need attention. And that will take place in a few cards later here.
Mm-hmm.
The next numbered card is the Wheel of Fortune card,
mm-hmm,
and it's except for the fact that it's unique and stunningly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much like a lot of other Wheel of Fortune cards. It's got the three beasts or the, you know, the Sphinx and the Hermanubis and,
mm-hmm,
and the Typhon, and they stand for those alchemical elements, of course, mercury, sulfur, and,
mm-hmm,
and salt. And they also stand for the three gunas of Hindu traditions. You know, the sattvas, rajas, and tamas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of hot, spicy things and ecstatic things, and then pretty slow and sluggish things, you know.
Okay.
They've even got the food, food categorized by those things.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I read a book with that. Yeah.
So you want to kind of lay off the Thomas food, I guess. That's,
yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to eat off other people's plates and things like that. But the Hindus have a saying that the gunas revolve. And here we have these same creatures having the exact same definitions as salt, sulfur, and mercury being the gunas. And the gunas revolve, and this is the Wheel of Fortune. So I think that's kind of cross-cultural thing there. Now, the next numbered card is number 11, and it in a regular deck it's called Strength. And usually you see a woman subduing a lion.
Yes.
A woman holding a lion's mouth open, or is she closing it? You know, you don't know if she's opening it or closing it, but she's got her arms around the lion's neck and is doing that. Now in Crowley's deck, he calls this card lust.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to great lengths to explain it's lust in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a strength, a bold lust.
Mm-hmm.
But in his card, he has the character from the Book of Revelation, Babylon, riding the beast.
Mm-hmm.
And you may think, oh, that's Crowley being so weird again. But in fact, the image of the woman holding the lion's mouth open was always Babylon. And the lion always meant the beast.
The beast. Mm-hmm.
But the alchemical way, you know. I don't have to tell you that book has been misunderstood.
Oh, I'm sure.
To the world's woe, it's been misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that's a unique one. The next numbered card is the Hanged Man, and Crowley's version is a very stylized, but it's more or less the standard image.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to get to the next one.
Lon, I have gotten that one for like numerous time, like within the last 6 months. It's always the one I get.
Wow. Well,
hey,
yeah,
I'm listening.
Yeah, well, it's depending under what circumstances you get the card. It's the Death card.
Yes.
And the technical name of it is the Child of the Great Transformers.
Oh.
Okay. The Lords of the Gates of Death. Now, I read tarot cards on occasion. Usually 1 month out of the year, I make an announcement that I'll read tarot cards over the telephone for people, and it's usually December or January, and I just, don't travel, and I just read tarot cards about 4 hours a day.
Oh my goodness!
People. But and I tell them when the death card comes up, sometimes the death card really means death. Because let's face it, death is a fact of life.
Exactly.
But most of the time it doesn't. It's meaning something else, and that part of that something else is displayed in Crowley's version of the death card. Now, usually we see death, a skeleton with a scythe, and he's mowing down, people, and sometimes he's on a white horse. But he's a pretty stiff character in most tarot decks. But in the Thoth deck, this guy is really limber.
He is.
He's in motion. It looks like he's dancing, and he's twisted, and And if you look carefully, you see that he's not on a in a field like most death cards. He's under the water. He's at the ocean floor.
Mm-hmm.
And with his scythe, instead of cutting people down, with his scythe he's making bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
He's stirring up the sediment at the bottom. And what he's creating, if you look inside, it looks like he's creating people. He's creating souls.
Yes. Yes.
And you know, he's got that hat of Osiris, that crown of Osiris, you know, mm-hmm. identifying him with that. Mm-hmm. But he's down there creating life.
Mm.
But he's creating life from the sludge.
Okay.
The sediment that's down at the bottom. And that's one of the characteristics of Scorpio, which
yes.
is the death card represents Scorpio. And it really is a very important thing to our alchemical story and how that egg is going to hatch into new life.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to stop talking about the death card for a second, but I'm going to need to turn one more card
mm-hmm.
to go to the art card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's the big alchemical climax. We see that mm-hmm. the eagle has turned
red,
and the lion
yeah.
has turned white.
White,
and,
yeah.
And this character has two faces, almost two heads. And the character is standing in front of a giant egg.
Mm-hmm.
And the egg says the Latin words whose initials spell vitriol.
Mm.
And this is telling us what's going on inside the egg. We can see by what's going on in front of this two-headed character here.
All right.
Now, the two-headed characters are the king and the queen that got married in the lover's card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you can see now they're together.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people, look, you know those commercials where people, a man and a woman, run toward each other on the beach?
Yes.
Well, this is where they crash together.
Here's the crash test. All right.
But there's something you've probably never noticed. There's a cauldron, and she's pouring fiery things on the watery
mm-hmm.
thing and watery stuff on the fiery stuff. But in front of the cauldron, do you see the skull with a raven sitting on top of it?
I don't. Oh, yes! On it. Oh, my God, yes.
That's Caput Mortem, the death's head.
Okay.
And so what that is telling us is what's going on inside that cauldron. That cauldron
oh.
is the death card.
Oh.
So now we go back to the death card.
Uh-huh.
And we look at three creatures.
Uh-huh.
We see a Scorpio, a
mm-hmm.
scorpion,
mm-hmm.
and we see a serpent down
yes.
at the bottom. And above the head of Mr. Death there is an eagle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Scorpio is one of the few zodiac signs that has, well, I might be the only one, that has three official images or emblems.
Mm-hmm.
Scorpio is an eagle, a serpent, and a scorpion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, that cauldron is hot.
Mm-hmm.
That cauldron yeah. in the art card is warming the egg, is incubating
mm-hmm.
the egg that was fertilized back in the hermit card that was
mm-hmm.
created at the lover's card. And it takes a special kind of heat to keep it just right.
Mm-hmm.
And the heat that is doing that is like the heat that forms from a compost pile.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you're a gardener, but my wife has tended compost piles
mm-hmm.
where we put out certain parts of are garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And it rots.
Mm-hmm.
It decomposes. And as it decomposes, it becomes hot.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes even in the, you know, like the cool of the morning, you can look out at the compost pile and you can see steam.
Yes.
Coming out from it.
Yes.
And a well-tended compost pile has its own internal thermostat, so it doesn't get too hot and it doesn't get too cold.
Mm-hmm.
And so the type of heat that's generated by the death card is that pure Scorpio decomposition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there's three kinds of composition or decomposition, and one is really flashy and really hot, really
mm-hmm.
explosive, and that's represented by the scorpion,
mm-hmm.
who tradition says will sting itself to death if ringed with fire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it was just the scorpion, we'd have a hard-boiled egg, or even a fried egg, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But there's another kind of putrefaction
mm-hmm.
That's represented by that serpent. And
mm-hmm.
that's like the serpent, you know, goes in waves. It goes up and down
mm-hmm.
in a serpentine motion.
Yeah.
And this is like that perfectly balanced putrefaction
mm-hmm.
that's exhibited in a well-tended compost pile.
Mm.
It gets so hot, and then it cools itself down.
Mm-hmm.
It literally shuts down the operation,
mm-hmm.
and then it gets cool enough that it kicks it on again.
Mm.
So it's that undulating putrefaction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's very, very stable.
Okay.
But there's a third kind of decomposition that only that doesn't even create heat, but it creates gas.
Mm.
And this is why when archaeologists unseal a tomb, there's always a little wind that's released.
Ah.
And that's the wind, the air, the gas that was created by thousands of years of
mm-hmm.
decomposing
mm-hmm.
You know, mummies and even mm-hmm. the wood and stuff inside.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the eagle.
Mm-hmm. So it
takes three kinds of this divine putrefaction. Stuff
mm-hmm.
that seems like, it's icky, it's stinky, it's, you know.
Yes.
It's unpleasant, like
mm-hmm.
death is
mm-hmm.
unpleasant. But it is so important.
Necessary, yeah.
Yes. And so if that is done properly,
mm-hmm.
now when we turn to that art card, that egg is going to hatch into new life.
Oh, fantastic. That is so, I mean, don't you like it? It's just like so, wow. So clear.
And it's something that's a source of infinite meditation.
Yes,
you'll
definitely.
You'll never get to the complete end, now I know everything about that. No,
it
changes every time that you meditate on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it is so interesting that we are about 2 minutes away from the end of the show. It's unbelievable, Lon. We can talk. We surely can.
Yes.
But what we can do definitely is that we really have this overview of those first 15 cards we said,
uh-huh.
and then I really invite our listeners to get your books and actually read through it and understand the Aleister Crowley's thought tarot cards with your explanation and your comments and whatever you bring out of it, because this is as clear in the book as you mentioned it, like vividly on the radio. So it is a very, very, I mean, to me, it is one of the best instruments of spiritual growth.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. Yeah, the book's called Understanding Aleister Crowley's Thoth Tarot.
It does. It is, and we do understand it better. And then in order for people to really get to it, you can always go to lonmiloduquette.com to find it. And it will be posted as well on the website, on the radio show, where you can click on it and directly be, landing on Lon website to find it. And you can find it anywhere, anyway, because you're everywhere. But thank you so much again for your time.
I looked up at the clock and I couldn't believe our hour is over.
I it seems like I just stood down. Well, it means that we had good time and we really enjoyed each other's company and listeners' company. But I really want to thank you. And then next week we'll be having another way of getting our spiritual growth and understanding it very a lot better, we'll say, because we will have the great opportunity to receive two Canadian Quebec people from up north that speak French. So maybe we will do it in French, who knows? But and they have created a self development game called Triplium, and we will be talking about that game and how it is that you can use it, and it is a fantastic tool, and you don't want to miss it. So, Lon, thank you again for your time.
You're welcome.
And the sunset probably is totally done now, by now. Hopefully you did enjoy it.
Oh, yes, it's dark now.
But, we always can, we open our doors for you. BBS Radio is... And especially Conscious Fitness Divine Body is open for you, so anytime you want to come back and talk about it, I am more than happy to do so.
Oh, just give me a call.
All right, I will.
Okay.
You have a great evening, and talk to you and next time for another Conscious Fitness Divine Body show on Tuesday 7 p.m. on Western Time. All right, have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Somewhere in my heart will never be apart.